Tonight we want to conclude our studies on Sunday nights from the book of Hebrews. Turn to chapter 12. We're going to cover verses 12 down through verse 17. This is a section now that sort of is drawing the conclusion to the beginning of chapter 11, as it had to do with now faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. The concept now is that there is to be a proper understanding of the child of God's mind in relationship to the facts, because faith is not tied to superstition or sort of a wishful thinking. Faith is tied to the facts. And in these facts, there are certain things to lift up the spirit, to encourage. The book of Hebrews actually is a book on encouragement. If you look at chapter 13 and verse 22, it says, suffer the word of exhortation. The word exhortation there literally means encouragement or consolation. It comes from the idea of what they nicknamed a man named Joseph in the work in the church, who was later called Barnabas, the son or exhortation or the son of encouragement. And so this section, verses 12 down to verse 17, is both a section of exhortations with a few admonitions. Now, an admonition is a warning. In other words, if you keep on doing the right thing, walking by faith, living unto God, believing that He is, that He's a reward of them that diligently seek Him, then there are certain things that ought to be true of your attitude and life. If you leave the Lord and you go off into something else, then there are certain warnings that need to be heeded, because there are certain consequences that go with leaving God. And generally, one not only leaves God, he leaves other things and other relationships. That's sort of a pattern as you'll find it through the Bible and actually through human history. So tonight we're going to look at just these few verses and try to summarize as you go through this section in chapter 12. First of all, there are two major facts up to verse 12 of chapter 12. First of all is there are some choice examples that have been given. When he talks about these all died in faith, Hebrews 11 and verse 13. And then the supreme example out of all the examples is chapter 12, verse 2, 3, and following. 2, 3, and 4. It has to do with Jesus himself. He is the author and the finisher of our faith. Now, by the way, he's the author and finisher of Abel's faith, Enoch's faith, Noah's faith, Abraham, Isaac, all those listings. So all these people all look to the same Messiah who was coming. Well, to a Christian, he looks to the Messiah who's come. And understanding the cross, the resurrection, the fact that he's at the right hand of God as the king and high priest, all of those facts are the examples by which one lives his life. For example, what if a person could sit down with an individual that believes in Confucianism, or Confucius, or some doctrine based upon some man, by the way, that's dead and has not been raised from the dead like Jesus has. It says, here is your supreme example. Out of all the followers of this particular religion, your founder is still dead. And the founder, the author and the finisher of my faith, not only died, but he died for the sins of everybody, including your founder of your religion, and he's going to raise your founder from the dead, which, by the way, is true. All who have died will be raised by the Lord, whether the resurrection of life or the resurrection of condemnation, John 5, 20, 29. So the concept is it important to have an example by which to understand what the concept's built on? Yes. Here's the way I illustrate it. Particularly when I was in elementary school, math was not my strong suit. And I always liked, when you're talking about problems and so forth, an example. You remember in the math books, it used to say, okay, here's the problems you have to work. Well, here's an example. And it gave you step by step how the example actually was solved. And if you went by that process, every one of those problems became easier because you had an example. Okay? So here you've got these choice examples. By the way, every one of these people walked by faith, and every one of these people died in faith. Even the Lord died in faith, right? Last word from the cross, Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit. That's faith, isn't it? And also, of course, the Lord's not dead. He's at the right hand of God, and he provides for us. But then there's a second thing. He talks about from verse 5 down to verse 11, which was last Sunday night's lesson, the thing that has to do with being a child. You're not an outcast. A person who's obeyed the gospel and is walking by faith is a child of God. And because life is tough, it doesn't mean that God doesn't like you or that God doesn't love you. God disciplines through suffering. As a matter of fact, one of the verses I didn't bring up was Psalm 119, verse 71. Though it's not an often quoted verse, it's not an often memorized verse. But here's what it says. It is good for me that I have been afflicted, that I might learn thy statutes. That's simply what the verse says. It's good for me that I've gone through trials. What does that do? It actually makes this more appreciated, more valuable. Because how many times do things out in life actually bring to mind the value of prayer, the value of trusting God, the value of reading the Bible? You know, I've known of people say, you know, I've read my Bible now more than I ever have when I've gone through this particular trial. Was that a bad thing? No, that's a good thing. By the way, sometimes when good things happen in life, does it cause a person to think more about God or less about God? Well, the track record of humanity is to forget God when prosperity takes place. What generally happens when suffering takes place? All of a sudden one gets spiritually minded, right? And that's a good thing. By the way, when we sing this song, I need thee every hour. By the way, that's not just in tough times. That's in the good one as well. By the way, Abel, did he need God in the good times? Enoch, did he need God in the good times? Noah, did he need God in the good times? Abraham, all of these examples, did Christ need God in the good times? By the way, Christ did have some good times. Not everything was tough, and not everything was a problem-solving day. Okay? So, it's a child status where he talks about if you suffer, it is not that God hates you. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens, right? Scourges every one of those whom he receives. Quoting Proverbs 3, verses 11 and 12. Now then, there are three major exhortations and then one major admonition that is found here. And we'll get to the admonition at the end of the lesson. But let's start with the three major exhortations. It's verses 12 and 13 is the first one. It has to do with healing, and this is not physical healing, this is spiritual healing, healing of a direction of life. Wherefore, lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees, okay, and make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it rather be healed. What in the world is that talking about if you're a Gentile? By the way, he's writing to Hebrews from an Old Testament background here. The feeble knees, the hands that hang down and the feeble knees and make straight paths for your feet, those were Old Testament idioms or figures of speech. You remember the statement in Genesis 4 when it says that Cain's countenance fell? And God then approached Cain and said, why has your countenance failed and you are so sad? All right, give me a nonverbal communication of one's countenance falling. All right, I'll demonstrate. You know, the lips down here and the head drops down. Have you ever seen a child that's disappointed and all of a sudden they give you that nonverbal communication? They give you that body language. Or the lip pokes out, or it sort of quivers, or something like that. Yesterday, our granddaughter, she's got this tooth she wants pulled. And I couldn't help but think about this when I was looking at this. And she wanted it pulled at our house for a good reason in her mind, because the tooth fairy comes at our house, a lot more money comes her way than it comes at home. That's her idea. Okay, so she literally let me get inside her mouth. And by the way, it's not ready. And I tried, trust me, I tried my dead level best to get this thing out. But it's still there even today. All right? Well, she whimpered. The chin quivered. Literally just balled up in her mother, just a wet mess in her mother's lap. Because I couldn't get the tooth out. I could tell you some even funnier antics than just me trying to get it out of her mouth, because it was really strange what went on at my house yesterday afternoon. But the idea is, disappointment was all over the face. All right? If I were to ask you the question, how do you show disappointment in life? When things don't go your way, and you're not talking about by word of mouth, I'm talking about just by body language. How do you do it? In the Jewish, Israelite, Hebrew way, it would be to drop the shoulders. That is what? When a person is feeling good about themselves, generally they stand erect, they're up, they may have their hands up, but it says when your hands hang down, when your feeble hands hang to the feeble knees, you know, the hands hang down. What is that? It means you drop the shoulders. Probably even drop the head. Okay? The feeble knees. By the way, feeble knees don't hold you up. So what do feeble knees do? Basically, they just sit on the ground. Sit on the ground. There are some artist renderings, by the way, of defeated nations. And generally, when they do this artist rendering, it is of a profile of a body position of a person who basically is down with one head down on a knee, okay? And it may be that their arm is draped over the top of their forehead like this, and so on. That looks so, so sad. I'll give you an illustration right here in Limestone County. There are two statues in Limestone County that are in recognition for those who fought in the Civil War in this county. There's one on the courthouse square right now in Limestone County, up in Athens. Stands on the corner. You know what I'm talking about? By the way, it stands on the northeast corner of the courthouse. Okay. This soldier is standing up, his head is up, erect. So that is not the original statue that was on that corner. It's not the original. The original statue that was on the corner of the courthouse is in the old Athens City Cemetery. And there is a semicircle of Confederate graves buried right there where the original statue is. The original statue, the position of the head is down, like defeated. When that original statue that's in the city cemetery was put on the courthouse square, the citizens of Limestone County did not like what it looked like because it was an admission of defeat. I got this out of Walker Jr.'s History of Limestone County. So a commissioned statue, a brand new statue was commissioned, not to destroy the old one, but to commission a brand new statue where the soldier is standing up, erect, with his head up, as though I've done my duty and I'm not ashamed of what I've done. And that's the one that is on the courthouse square. Now, you may never have even known anything about that. But by the way, the original one is in the Athens City Cemetery. And it had to do with they didn't like the way it looked. It was as though he hung his head in defeat. That's not what we're going to look at every time we go up here on the courthouse or go up here to this square. Here's the hands that hang down. You drop the shoulders, the feeble knees. In other words, I'm so discouraged, I don't even want to stand up. Okay? Make straight paths for your feet. What in the world does that mean, a straight path? Okay, well, clear me a line so I can walk in a straight line. No, that's not what he's talking about. Straight, obviously, here is not straight, means difficult. It means a straight line. But the word path here is a unique word. If I were to say, you need to go out here to Highway 72 and take County Line Road. But by the way, does County Line Road and Highway 72 look alike? They're four lanes, right? Okay. Well, there was a different word for highway versus road versus path. What do you mean by a path? Path is a trodden footpath. It might be a path in a rural area. You take this highway, you turn left or right onto a road. We which, by the way, is not a highway, it's a road. And when you get to the end of the road, it's a dead end, then you take this path. So you had words, they had different terms for different kinds of travel modes or, you know, directions, okay? Make a straight path. Well, have you ever seen a person's discouraging, they're sort of moping? They don't really walk in a straight line. They just sort of amber around, back and forth. In other words, hold your shoulders up, get your feet up under you, get out here and walk with your head up. Why? Look at the examples that you've got to live by. The Lord himself, the supreme example. Look at, you're a child of God. Come on, act like a child of God. Act like a person of faith. Make straight paths for your feet. Walk like you belong to somebody, which, by the way, you do. Act like and show people that you actually love God and have hope and live by faith. Like the just live by what? Live by faith, right? Romans 1:17, Hebrews 10:39. And so the concept here is what? This is an exhortation. And the idea also is, let us all do that. But then he gives sort of a caveat here, a warning. Lest that which is lame be turned out of the way. He's about to now follow a line of thought here that's quite interesting. Do you believe in positive peer pressure? You believe there's such a thing as positive peer pressure? If you're around people who are upbeat, optimistic, you know, faith-building kind of people, if you're around those kind of people, is it easier to have that same disposition and to live that kind of life? Well, what if you're around the opposite of that? What if you're around those that basically, you know, they're not very optimistic and there's a lot of complaining and, yeah, I'm not real sure about all that. Can that rub off on you? Well, the word here is lame. Lame. By the way, lame is the opposite of strong knees, the feeble knees. That's your lame. Versus those that don't have feeble knees, that's your strong. In other words, don't be like the lame that you know are out there. You're different. You're walking by faith. You're holding on to your faith. You're not giving up. It's tough, but you're not giving up. You're going to die in faith. These all died in faith. So, get out here in this world and walk like you've got a reason to walk. You know, he says, wherefore? Based upon all of what we've studied, chapter 11 and in the first part of chapter 12, now, here's how to go live your life. Let me ask you a question. Of all the people in the world who should be the happiest people on earth, who should they be? Christians or non-Christians? Who really should demonstrate the joy of the Lord on this planet? Who has hope in death? More than anybody in the world, who has hope in death? You know, when Paul wrote 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 13, he says, I would not have you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning them which are asleep, that you sorrow not as others which have no hope. Well, what do you have that they don't have? You have hope. You have hope in your loved ones. You have hope in your own. So what do? Go out here and live your life that way. Live your life like you've got hope. Live your life like you're happy. Think about that a minute. How do you convert somebody if all of a sudden the first 5 seconds they see is a, well, what's wrong with you? Well, I just come back from church. Well, I got to get up and go to church. How does that influence anybody for good? Well, you got a reason for going to services? I mean, can you be optimistic about it? Is there anything about this that actually encourages you to keep on living the right thing? How many of you have ever had a bad day and you come to services and when you get through being around God's people and singing and prayer and so forth, next thing you watch, you know, it's good for me to have been here. I actually feel better. Why? Because I'm around people that think like I think. How many of you have ever been around people that don't think like you think? How many of you have ever been to a place and all of a sudden you feel like, well, I just need to take a bath? I mean, I know I'm not dirty as far as the skin is concerned, but I just been around so much filth as far as immorality and vulgarity and so forth, I just feel like I just need to take a bath. Well, the Christian life, can you imagine no Christians on this planet? Live in a world where Christianity does not exist. Now, how are you going to face the world tomorrow? How's that going to happen? Some of you realize it, maybe all of you, but I have a sort of a habit, particularly as it starts around the wintertime, actually now, and it ends about right now, of following people who have hiked the Appalachian Trail. And there is a gentleman, by the way, who just finished that. He went all the way from Georgia to Maine, all the way to Mount Katahdin. He's now at home. I followed him through his YouTube channel. And it's quite interesting to watch some of their comments. By the way, there's nothing easy about that path that they're walking. There's nothing easy about it at all. As a matter of fact, there are times in there to where guys begin to question themselves, what am I doing out here? Literally, they'll say, you know, I could be at home eating this instead of eating this. I could be in a bed instead of being here. And nothing easy about 2,190 miles by foot over mountains, up and down and all around. But there was a guy lately who climbed it, and when he got to the top and he touched the sign, he wept. He wept. Cried like a baby. Now, how do you take a man in his middle 30s crying like a baby when he gets to the end? Because he's accomplished something most people can say they've never accomplished, never going to attempt it. And then he says, this was hard. He says, but I'm glad I did it. On top of that, I would encourage anybody, he says, who's ever even thought about doing it, to do it in your lifetime. Now, folks, you can ask my wife. I have studied that 2,190-mile trek many days, many times. And I have studied the people who quit, and I have studied the people who make it, who finish it. By the way, sometimes people don't make it because they get hurt, they get injured, seriously injured. There have been 9 deaths on that trail. By the way, they don't put that in the brochure about hiking it. So why would you want to do something that tough? Make straight paths for it. In other words, they say, if you don't have, number one, the belief you can do it, you won't finish it. Number two, if you don't push through and realize it has rained for 5 consecutive days and I've walked in mud for 5, everything I've got is wet, even my food is wet. And I know back home there's a hot meal and a warm shower and a warm bed, and an easy chair, and all of what goes with that. But I just think about Limestone Bible Camp. Rusty Johnson, one time when Rusty was a director, as it got toward the end of the week, he said, you know what I'm going to enjoy when I get home? And I said, what? He said, a hot shower. I said, well, you've had hot showers down here. He says, you never feel clean down here. Even after you've shot, you never finish. He says, and number two, a chair that when you sit in it, you actually feel like you're sitting in a comfortable chair. He says, you'll sit in this chair, you'll lean on one side until it goes numb, and then you rent on this little aluminum rail on this side. He says, I'm so tired of sitting in a chair you fold up and carry around with you. I want a chair you can sit in. It's nothing but cushions. Just big pillow chair. That what we call them, lazy boys. Recliners. Okay. Well, by the way, if you live the life of the world, is not the way of transgressors hard? By the way, Proverbs 13:15 says that. Okay. All that live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. Right? 2 Timothy 3:12. So you're going to suffer either way. So which path had I rather take? And some of these people are leaving the faith now, so he is encouraging this church. lest the lame be fallen out of the way, but rather be healed. In other words, heal the way you think. Change your mind. So let's go to the second exhortation. Note verse 14 now. Follow peace with all, literally all men, and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. Follow peace. Matter of fact, the 12th chapter of Romans, we're discussing that on a Sunday morning Bible class here in the auditorium. And the denotion is what? As much as lies within you, live at peace with all men. By the way, these Hebrew brethren, they're about to lose their capital city. Jerusalem's going to be destroyed by the Roman government, by the Roman army. So I am to live at peace. I am to follow peace and holiness. Follow peace and holiness? What are you talking about? Well, number one, peace has to do with the relationship between men, and holiness has to do between your relationship to God. And be a holy people among the world that's an unholy people. So there is a pursuit now of a specific way of life, a holy life. 1 Peter 1:13 says this way, verse 14. As obedient children, note the word children, not fashioning yourselves according to the former lust in your ignorance, but as he which has called you is holy, so be ye holy in all manner of conversation or conduct. Why? For it's written, quotes the Old Testament, be ye holy, for I am holy. So the pattern is, like father, like child. I'm a child of God. Of all of what I've suffered in life, I'm still a child of God. I've got examples of people who also suffered, but they died in faith. They lived by faith. They died in faith. And so they lived a holy life. I can live a holy life. And when I'm living among people that are unholy, I will still pursue peace as much as lies within me. Well, let me ask you a question. Is that not really a better life than war? Some of you have actually served in active military combat in this audience. I did a study one time about the nature of war. I've never served in the military as far as this country is concerned. I'm a veteran soldier of Jesus Christ, as most all of us here in this room are. But when I was reading a biography on Harry Truman, particularly at the end of World War II, when they were thinking about dropping the bomb, the Manhattan Project, this country was tired, and I think you realize this from just general history, this country was tired of war. It had been 4 years, 1941 all the way to 1945. And even though the war was over in Europe, for the U.S., the war was still going on in the Pacific. So the war wasn't over. So the Manhattan Project and the result of the Manhattan Project was basically to end the war. But in that biography, Harry Truman said, winning the war is not the problem. He says the problem is maintaining a lasting peace once the war is over. That's the problem. Now, what does he mean by that? Here are two people, they're not just at odds at one another, they're trying to kill one another. And the war ceases. Well, there's at least no bullets and bombs flying in different directions. But can you have a cold war? Can you have a cessation of fighting, so to speak, outwardly, and yet still be fighting inwardly? Truman said, how do you take care of the relation between the United States and Japan when you've just blown them to smithereens? How do you take care of the relation between the United States and Great Britain and even Russia with reference to Germany and Italy and all these other countries? How do you not win a war militarily? How do you maintain a lasting peace so that you don't end up rolling right over into another war for this reason. World War I was supposed to be the war to end all wars, right? That's the way it was built. Why then did we even have World War II? And by the way, did you know World War I? It wasn't long. You went right back into World War II, and a lot of World War II issues came right out of the World War I problems. So you see, it's not winning a war. It's maintaining a lasting peace afterwards. That's the issue. How about Christians that are at odds with one another? All right, well, we'll just agree not to fuss and fight. Well, you haven't made peace. You've just stopped talking to one another. That's not peace. That's just a cessation of hostilities. That's more like an armistice. This word here, the word peace here, means for things to be brought back as they should be. The Hebrew word in the Old Testament for peace is the word that was often used for asking how you're doing. When David's men went out pursuing Absalom, when Absalom, you know, tried to take the kingdom away, David made a statement to Joab and to the soldiers, make sure you do well with Absalom. The word well there means peace. And when the message came back after Absalom had died, when the message came back, the question David asked is it well with Absalom? Now, the word well there is not the Hebrew word. What he asked is it peace with Absalom? The word is shalom. To ask how a person was doing, and they say they're doing well, in Hebrew you say, well, they're in peace. You and I might think, well, they're dead, like rest in peace. No, it doesn't mean they're dead. It means everything is as it should be. Okay? Can you have fusses in churches? Yes. Can you have fusses between individuals? Yes. Can you have it in your home? Yes. Can you have it on the job? Yes. Then how do you maintain peace? As a Christian, whether you're at war with me or not, I am to follow peace with all men. And I am to follow holiness. I am to do the right thing. And by the way, the Bible says, as an exhortation, actually as an admonition, without which no man will see the Lord. So I ask you the question, is this a matter of judgment or is this a matter of faith? Without which no man shall see the Lord. That's a matter of faith, isn't it? So it's not an option to go to heaven whether I'm going to follow peace and holiness. I got to follow peace and holiness if I'm going to go to heaven. By the way, did Abel follow peace and holiness? Did Enoch? Did Noah? Did Abraham? Every one of them. All these examples. Did Jesus follow peace with all men and holiness? Absolutely. So now we come to the third one, and that's a heavenly viewpoint. Now watch. When people begin to lose their faith, what direction do they go? They go back into the world, right? Watch this exhortation. Looking diligently, verse 15, lest any man fail of the grace of God. In other words, you're losing sight now of this grace of God that has saved your soul. Point number two. Lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many, many be defiled. By the way, that's an admonition. When Dad used to preach this verse in gospel meetings, when I used to go with him, he'd cite this verse. And I could still see him do this. He says, have you ever seen a person in the church who was bitter? And by the way, bitterness wants company. And what you do is you go out here and you dig up an old root out here in a field that's got a bitter taste to it. And the next thing you know, they got that in their mouth and they're sucking on it, sucking the juice out of this root. And by the way, bitterness makes you bitter. Okay? And the next thing, somebody in the church sees you sucking on that root. He says, what are you doing? He says, I'm sucking on this root. Here, have a taste. The next thing, they start sucking on it, it makes them bitter. Somebody says that, what are you doing? I said, I'm sucking on this root. What does it taste like? Tastes bitter. Let me try. Next thing you know, everybody wants to be bitter. You ever seen bitterness rub off on somebody else? Sometimes you'll find people wanting to decide that you're the complaint department. Oh, hey, you're the kind of person that'll listen to anything that somebody wants to vent, so I'm going to vent on you. Okay? By the way, how do you like that kind of department? How do you like that job? I told Pam one time after doing some counseling, marriage counseling one time, I said, I feel like I have worked for about 8 solid hours digging ditches in a field. I am exhausted. And I told her, I says, I thank God that you and I don't have to deal with what I've had to deal with for the past hour. By the way, she doesn't know anything about the situation or even who I'm talking to. It's all in confidence. Matter of fact, she's better off not knowing anything. Trust me, you're better off not knowing anything what I know. But bitterness feeds other folks. And you may not even be having a bad day. The next thing you know, this person that's bitter makes you feel bitter. Things hadn't gone my way. How about your life? You've always had your way? Well, no. Why don't you just feel like I do? Let's just get a club together, the bitter club. You know, let's go grow us a garden of roots and pass it around. See, bitterness is a root sin. And if you don't nip that thing in the bud, if you don't dig that up and get rid of it and burn it, dry and burn it, the next thing you know, it'll poison a whole church. It'll poison your home. It'll poison your workforce. It'll poison anything that has to do with group activities. When I was at Neil, we didn't have any elders there. There's an opportunity to send Bibles into China. Some of you have heard this, some of you haven't. It came through the church mail, which was my own personal mailbox, and they said, do we have any new business? And I brought it up. I knew we had the money in the bank. I knew it was in there because the first item of business in the men's business meeting was how much money we got in the bank. Next thing you know, there was a gentleman, an elderly gentleman. He's deceased now. He spoke up and he said, you know, 1974, tornadoes came through here in North Alabama and destroyed a lot of houses and some church buildings up there. He says, we might need that money to rebuild this building. He could already see a future tornado coming through to destroy that building. Do you know, even the tornadoes that we had over here in 2011 didn't even come close to the Neil Church of Christ building. Got our building, didn't touch the Neil building. And he killed that suggestion right there. He killed it. We got back to the house. The telephone rang. Pam answered the phone. It is the wife of a gentleman that was in that meeting. And the wife wants to know what on earth is wrong with her husband. And Pam says, well, I don't know. What are you talking about? Says, well, he's as fired up mad having come out of that meeting. What in the world went on in that meeting? Pam said, well, I want to meet. Here, I'll let you talk to Jimmy. He is in the meeting. So I picked up the phone, and Cherie is talking to me on the phone. And she says, Stanley is, and by the way, Stanley hardly ever opened his mouth anytime. He was so shy. But he is irate. And I said, well, Cherie, all I can think of is there was something that probably he thought needed to be done, and it got nixed. It got knocked in the head. He is so mad that we didn't do such and such. I said, well, I'm sorry. That's the way the vote went. That's the way the decision was made. She says, well, I don't want to deal with him. Listen, her husband's bitterness in that meeting, did it pour over on her? And she wasn't even in the meeting. Lest any root of bitterness spring up, and many be defiled. How many of y'all just like watching the news every day so you can find out what kind of attitude to have that day? You know, there are people that watch the news and they'll develop an attitude based upon what's on the news. You know, life's just, this country's going down the drain. There's nothing good at it. Why? Well, did you listen to the news? Well, no. By the way, even journalists will tell you, don't believe everything you hear and read. Because generally it's just reported what is sometimes sensational, sometimes what's very violent. And the nature it is, why? Because that's sort of a catchy line by which to catch you for the rest of the information. Watch now this bottom part. Here's the tragedy of it all. This book is written to the Hebrews, and by the way, while Esau was not an Israelite, because Esau is not of the line of Jacob, Jacob is where the Israelites come, Esau is the Edomites, but Esau is a Hebrew. All Jews are Israelites, and all Israelites are Hebrews, but not all Hebrews are Israelites. For example, Abraham was a Hebrew, but Abraham was not an Israelite. Only through Jacob were the Israelites. Okay. But Esau is Jacob's twin brother. Esau is as much a Hebrew as Jacob is. So he uses an illustration of a descendant of Abraham now, grandchild of Abraham, child of Isaac, as a point in case as to what can happen when you turn from a walk of faith. Watch. Lest there be any fornicator or profane person as Esau, who for one morsel of meat or food sold his birthright. Now that's bad. But look at the next sentence. For you know how that afterward, when he would have inherited the blessing, the birthright and the blessing are two different things. The birthright was what he gained simply by being the first one born. Firstborn actually got a double portion in an inheritance. Like the older brother and the prodigal son in Luke 15, the older brother would have got a double portion being the older brother. So he was privileged being the older brother. Okay? You know that afterwards when he would have had it to bless, he was rejected, for he found no place of repentance, though he sought it carefully with tears. In other words, once Isaac gave the blessing to Jacob, who he thought was Esau now, right? He thought he was Esau. Once Isaac gave the blessing to Jacob, and by the way, it was predicted that the elder shall serve the younger, even before they were born, which, by the way, it came out exactly the way God said. That's God's foreknowledge, man's lack of it. And now, all of a sudden, here is Esau. Well, he took from me my birthright, and now he took my blessing. How many of you have ever seen anybody that got disappointed twice? Now, Hebrews does not tell us what Esau had planned, but according to the book of Genesis, what did Esau plan after Jacob took the blessing? He planned to kill him, didn't he? The days of my father's life are drawing nigh to a close. After he's dead, I'll deal with Jacob. That's why Jacob had to leave home. It wasn't to go find a wife, though he did. He had to leave because Esau sought his life. By the way, Esau is a father of the Edomites. Are the Edomites friend or foe of the Israelite nation? Did the Edomites follow the true God, or did they follow their idolatrous God, like the Moabites and the Ammonites? By the way, those are Hebrews too. Do you know that? That's Lot's kids, Abraham's nephew. So what happens all of a sudden when you're not going to follow God as he is and that God is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him? What are you going to do? Don't be like Esau. By the way, when Esau married, did it please his father and mother of the choice that he made in his home? No. When Esau did what he did it please God? Did it please his father and mother of what he did to sell his birthright? You know, you'd think that a person that keeps on making mistakes would learn from his mistakes, right? But you know something about Esau? Up to this point, he keeps repeating the same mistakes. I've always told my children, and I'll close the lesson with this. I've always told my children, it is not the case that you're going to live a sinless life. That's not the case. Matter of fact, all have sinned, come short of the glory of God. That's not just the Bible, that's just a fact of life. Your mother, your dad, anybody you'll ever know, and you included. It's not that you're not going to make mistakes. The issue is you can't keep repeating the same mistakes.
learn from. Noah
never made any mistakes, right?
Oh no, Noah made a major one. After the flood, by the way.
Abraham never made a mistake, right?
No, Abraham lied twice. It's in the Bible.
David never made a mistake, right?
No, David made some big ones. But what's the point?
Those that walk by faith are not walking a sinless life. Only Jesus did that. Those that walk by faith are trying. Are trying to do what's right. There ultimately came a point with Esau that he reverted to a product of what Cain actually did to Abel, his brother. Esau never killed Jacob. But Esau was headed down the road that Cain followed. His hands hung down. His knees became feeble. He didn't make straight paths for his feet. And when the days of my father's life are over, I'll kill my brother. Folks, that's of the devil. That's not of God. That's not live at peace with all men as much as lies within you and follow holiness without which. That's not. Esau walked down the way of Cain. Jude verse 11. By the way, let's give Esau at least one piece of credit. In 20 years after Jacob comes back, do you know what Esau does do? Esau reconciles with his brother. There's no bitterness. There is no remorse. The emphasis is he fell on his neck and wept. Read Genesis 33. But the book of Hebrews doesn't give that reference. It gives the reference of a man who got so discouraged he would have killed what he thought was his problem, his own brother. So Esau becomes both a warning, and I would say to read the rest of the story, he would become also an encourager. Don't be like I used to be. Don't go down that road. By the way, how did his descendants do? Like father, like son? Where Esau turned and repented, what did the Edomites do? They hated Israel. They were bitter enemies with very, very few exceptions in that nation. By the way, even the Moabites were that way. The Ammonites were that way. There are very few exceptions in those cases that decided we'll walk by faith. We won't walk like our fathers. If you're subject tonight to heaven's invitation, as this exhortation says, make straight paths for your feet. Don't walk like a lame man. Hold your shoulders up. Hold your head up. Walk optimistically as a child of God with an example of faith in Christ, who is the author and the finisher of your faith. Obviously, believing as the Son of God, turning from sin and repentance, confessing your faith, tonight be baptized into Christ. Become a child of God. Have the eternal hope of eternal life and the optimistic point of view. If you're here tonight and need to come home, while Reese leads us in the song, won't you come as we stand and sing?